This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil, now streaming, only on Hulu.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
This episode is brought to you by Reese's Peanut Butter Cups. In breaking news, leading scientists worldwide are conducting experiments to determine if Reese's Peanut Butter Cups are the perfect combination of peanut butter and chocolate. However, it appears the study was inconclusive, as the scientists couldn't help but eat all the Reese's. Because when you want something sweet, you can't do better than Reese's. Find Reese's now at a store near you.
Hello there. Control your insolence and concentrate. It's time for Most Things Kenobi.
Hi everyone, welcome to another episode of Most Things Kenobi, a podcast about Obi-Wan Kenobi and all things Star Wars. I'm your host, Lauren.
And I'm your host, Leanne.
And this week, we're doing some more book reviews. We're diving back into, from a certain point of view, Empire Strikes Back edition. And we're going to talk about two more short stories. One is very short.
Very short. It was only like 6 minutes long.
Yeah. And we're just going to dive back into some stuff. I just want to say also, I have my heater going, my dishwasher going, and my sump pump going off constantly because it's so wet here. So sorry for all the background noise. I know it's gonna be there. So
there's an odd comfort to the pump that goes off all night when I sleep in your house. It was concerning when I first stayed with you, and then I realized what it was, and I was like, oh, okay, that's fine. It's normal.
I totally forgot that it's under this room, and when you came and stayed, we had the rainstorm, and it was just going all night. I'm so sorry.
Now it's oddly comforting. It's like, oh, I'm at Lauren's place.
Well, we had like 3 feet of snow and then torrential rain, and it's been raining, misting for like a week now, so all that snow is just it's like a swimming pool in the backyard.
That's gross.
So yeah, the sump pump is just pumping it out so that it can come back into the crawl space and pump it out. It's going to be here till spring. So it's mud season here.
It is, yeah. It's getting there.
It came early this year.
We're still frozen. But mud season is coming.
Yeah. Part one. Part two
one. All right, well, the first of the two stories, this probably isn't going to be a very long episode, not as long as our other ones, but that's okay.
Yeah.
We go as the topic dictates.
True.
But like Lauren said, the second story was like 6 minutes long. So.
Yeah, so we'll speed through that one pretty quick.
Yeah.
Thank you again to our friend Kenobi Wolf for suggesting these stories and providing us with this audiobook. We've really enjoyed coming back to it over and over. It's been fun to kind of dive into short stories as opposed to a long novel, because you and I just don't have time for that.
No, and these are easy to digest no matter what they are, so mm-hmm. it's kind of neat. I'll tell you what, the first one that we're talking about is titled But What Does He Eat?
Mm-hmm.
And they mentioned one of my favorite Star Wars locations. Did you catch it?
Which one?
Kuat.
Oh, Kuat. Yes, I did.
Yeah. I was like, oh my God. It's like my random obscure, like, shipping dock planet ring place that I oddly like in the galaxy of Star Wars. And there it was mentioned.
Yeah, I thought of you as soon as I heard it. I thought that was a great reference.
So this one is on Cloud City, Bespin.
Yes.
And I didn't quite know where it was going. And I will say that this was not my favorite short story.
I agree.
Mostly because I didn't like the tone of the woman's voice narrating. Nothing against her, but it made the character seem really off-putting.
It just seemed really bitchy.
Yeah.
Honestly.
Yeah. And I thought it was going to kind of like stop being that way, and it didn't. I mean, okay, so what it is it's the point of view of a cook or the head chef.
Mm-hmm. Like celebrity chef.
Yes, like galaxy renowned.
So maybe she's bitchy. She's bitchy because she's like the female Gordon Ramsay, right? That's the...
Yeah. I was thinking it's below her. Everything was below her. And don't you dare wake me up before my alarm. And we negotiated my hours. Bitch, if I could negotiate my hours, I might also be a bitch. But I'm a bitch because I can't negotiate my hours. So it's a lose-lose anyway. Anyhow, she kicked a droid, and that's when I was like, okay, I don't like this woman. Like, not the droid's fault. Anyway, I'm not building the story up very well.
So she's a celebrity chef that works for Lando, basically. And she gets called in earlier than she would like, even though it's probably the middle of the day.
Yes.
And he asks her to, quote, make refreshments for some guests that he's trying to kind of not impress, but like just
they're trying to keep up appearances. He's afraid because we come to learn, and we pretty much deduce early on that it's the banquet room where Vader is waiting when Han and Leia and everybody show up.
Yeah. So,
but she doesn't know that.
No. Oh, she doesn't.
I also found this interesting. I had to look it up. So she's a Deveronian.
Yes.
And those are the characters that have like they're like the devil horns. They have the...
Oh, really?
Yeah. Cause I was like, oh, I don't immediately place like her species. So I looked it up. I'm like, oh, you want that in the kitchen? So then I typed in female Deveronian.
You want that in the kitchen.
It's just like, why? They can hang like their washcloth, like their damp rag. You know how they always have like a rag over their shoulder?
Yeah. Put it on a
hang
horn.
It off one of the horns. But if you look up female Deveronians, they don't have those. So
they just have, they describe it as having like skull bumps, basically.
Yes. So I don't know if they get them sawed down.
I don't know.
Or if it's like female deer have...
Yes.
They have little bumps, but they don't turn into horns.
Yeah. When the sous chef is also... The sous chef is an Ugnaught, which, speaking of, you want that in your kitchen.
Do you want that in your kitchen? Although, I did have a soft spot for the sous chef, because we come to find out that the sous chef has the idea to poison everybody.
Yes. So... My big complaint with the story is they spend all this time on stuff that's not necessary and not enough time on the substance of the story, which is this murder plot.
Yes.
Which I was listening and just kind of like, meh, meh, meh. And then they said that and I was like, well, now you have my attention.
It made me think of the scene in Beth Revis's book about Jin. God, we are so
Rebel
tired.
Life.
Yes.
This is a mess already.
You know that one about Jin? Yes, in Rebel Rising, where she's in the cell and her cellmate wants to plot to get away and they can't. They just simply can't. So she, like, does the ultimate escape and throws herself off a cliff.
Yes.
So I was thinking there's no way out for the. There is no good ending here. And it is probably a good thing they didn't decide to put poison in any of the food because, like, there were some rebels there, you know? So if they ate anything...
Right.
They'd have gotten the whole crew.
You read my my mind. That's my exact thought as well. First of all, when have we ever seen stormtroopers take off their helmets for refreshments? Like, never.
It's true. And,
like, the whole... That's why I find, like, the whole premise not... strong enough.
Yeah.
I don't know. Like, why would Lando want that? I guess to give up appearances. Wouldn't Vader be like, get this shit out of here? Like, I didn't ask for refreshments. I can't eat.
Yeah, I would have just had, like, plastic fruit in a bowl, you know, that you put out circa 1986. Like, the fake fruit.
Yes.
Remember those, like, gelatinous, squishy plastic grapes? Yes.
I do. I feel like they were in every furniture store you'd go
or that.
In.
Yeah.
Like model homes.
Yes. Yes. Yes.
The height of luxury. But also, when Vader invites Han and Leia into the dining room, like, he doesn't mean to actually eat.
No. They're not. It's just a joke. It's a...
Yes.
It's like...
a way to trap them.
So she's dealing with meringue and all. There were a lot of planetary ingredients.
Yeah.
And I couldn't picture any of them because I didn't know what any of them were. And I didn't feel like looking them up. There is a whole repository of different planetary foods on Wikipedia. I've looked it up.
Is there? I've never looked at that.
Drinks Interesting. And food. Anything that was mentioned in comics... seen on film, seen on screen, anything. It's just amazing. So
cool.
I thought it was kind of cool that they, like, pulled from their brains or from a list or just made shit up and that made the list. I have no idea, but, like, it was an extensive list and they lost me because I couldn't picture it. Part of the story is picturing it.
Yeah, I do. Like I said, I think they spent all this time on these details that don't matter.
On her being a complete dick.
Absolutely. Like
it didn't add anything to the story.
No. I guess, like, okay, so chefs, like, head chefs have a reputation for being, like, very firm in their beliefs that their decisions are the right decisions.
Sure, yes.
And they run their kitchen, you know, like a dictatorship, and I get that. I have a relative who used to work as a cook, and... yes.
Well, I just remember Anthony Bourdain's book. I read Anthony Bourdain's book, and it sounded just like this.
Yeah. So at least
I get
that's
it.
Accurate. But, like, the interesting part is the part where the Ugnaught suggests, the sous chef suggests that they poison Vader. They could kill Vader with one taste of food.
And
the
humans.
Chef is like, what if they make us taste it before they eat it?
Yeah, that was an old... thing to do.
Yeah, for sure. And then I think they just went back to making regular food and that was the end of the story.
And did anybody eat any of it? No, it was probably just sat there.
Yeah, no. So it was... the thing I found most interesting was the reference to Devaron, honestly, because she talks about a temple there. So I looked it up.
Oh, yeah.
And there was the Jedi Temple there, which I forgot. We actually do see it in Clone Wars for like a teeny tiny second. It's where Savage Opress goes there and kills the Jedi Master and the Padawan that are there.
Oh, yeah.
And they take control of that temple. And I guess it's built on like a Force Vergence or something. Like how the Jedi Temple is built on this passionate Sith Vergence. I don't know.
Yes.
This one was built on like a Force, like not a Sith, you know, crematorium or whatever it was. But it was there for a long time. And then Savage Opress captured it during Clone Wars. And then the Empire bombed it during the reign of the Empire. So it is ruins that Luke Skywalker went to visit.
That's cool.
I think it was... I know he went there twice, and one time, I can't remember if it was before Empire Strikes Back, but he went back after Return of the Jedi and, like, trained in the ruins and like felt the force and all of that stuff. So I don't know if that's from a book or a comic or something, but it was on Wikipedia and I thought that was kind of cool. So
I gotta tell you, I love a good Jedi temple. Love
me too.
I love the one on Lothal from Rebels. That one was cool.
So cool. The cone that twists to reveal the door.
Yeah.
Yes. That was awesome.
That was cool. Yep. The more I see of them, the better and better they get. I think they're really cool.
Yeah, because they're like kind of scary. Sometimes you can go in and have these crazy visions because they're built on like an energy field usually.
I wonder who sensed the energy fields. Like, could Jedi just sense them and they're like, you know what? Right here. This is it. So I guess the question that begs to be answered is, what does Vader eat? Does she even ask the question? I was waiting for like the title to be spoken. And I don't think the exact words even happen. Or did I miss it?
I'm not sure, honestly. I would say I think so, but I'm not positive now. I'd have to go back and re-listen.
Well, honestly, I don't think Vader eats at all. I think he either gets tube-fed when he's in the gel. What's that stuff called?
Oh, the Bacta.
The Bacta. He's either got a tube hooked up, and or they do those little nutrient bars or something. Maybe he has, maybe he has an aromatherapy pot. No, that would gunk up his respirator. So I think he just feeds off anger.
Yeah. Well, he probably, I mean, they could do like injections with nutrients.
Oh, that's true.
Like that. You know, I don't imagine he can eat very easily.
No, no. That would, oh, that's terrible, actually.
But also, like, he wouldn't take his helmet off in front of people to eat. So this whole idea of putting refreshments out in front of Darth Vader, like putting a thing in front of an evil person that they cannot have, would just make them angrier.
That's provoking. Yes. Yeah.
Exactly.
I know. It's all about like the service aspect. Like they're guests and Lando's got a knife up to his neck literally throughout this. I mean, not literally, but figuratively throughout this entire thing. And he just wants it to, he wants to come off as Lando comes off. Lavish.
Right.
Well to do, put together. He's got his shit together. Don't come crawling and looking through the books, Vader, while you're here. Pay attention to the meringue, you know, stuff like that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So, but I don't think Vader eats, which is really sad. Because he brought Padme a cake once, and now he can't have his cake like or eat it, too.
His little space pizza box that he brought
him. Yeah, I love that.
All right, well, shall we move on to the next story?
Yeah, please, because I don't have a fucking clue what went on in this story. None. I was confused from, I still don't know what it was about. I'm just going to be completely honest.
So it's the last story in the whole book called The Wills Strike Back. And I think it was read by Jonathan Davies and Mark Thompson, who are two, you know, veteran Star Wars narrators. And Jonathan Davies was the Wills. I think they were both Wills, but he was like, you know how the crawl, the like the whole stories are supposedly the Wills documenting what happened.
I guess. So, I still think like, it's R2-D2.
Yeah.
That's been my headcanon.
I kind of am just sticking with that idea anyway. Because, like, why the fuck would the Wills write everything down? They're, like, they're not, like, corporeal. I don't understand.
No. Right.
They don't write. They just float around.
They float and retain things. Yeah. And speak in riddles.
They are the repository. They're not writing. Anyway, I think they're basically just making fun of the crawl at the beginning of the movies because they switch tone. Like, they switch tense. And this guy, this writer, Tom Engelberger, has written, he's like a not even young adult, he's like younger kids than that, an author for that. He's like a child writer, and he wrote like the origami books. Have you seen those? The Star Wars, like Origami Yoda, Origami Vader, whatever they are. So this last story is written like that. It's like, for kids. It's childish on purpose.
Is that Why? Okay. I missed all of that.
Yeah, I didn't know he was that writer until I looked it up specifically, like, who is this guy? But it made sense. Once I saw that, I was like, ah, this tracks now.
Okay. Because
those books, I read them to my cousins when they were little kids. They were like 4. And they were not entertaining for an adult, but they were very entertaining to the kids. And that's kind of how I felt about this story.
I spent the entire thing so confused. I get they were talking about the squirrel, but I love the squirrels. They're iconic.
I know. I do too. And he made fun of Luke, which I'm never really that
not a fan. Nope. Stay out of our camp. Like... No, thank you. But why was it at the end?
Instead of at the beginning?
Yeah, the beginning would have made way more sense, right? Because the scroll starts at the beginning. It could have set up, I don't know.
Who wants to start a book like this?
I don't know who would want to end a book like this. This was terrible. I think it's terrible. I'm just trying not to mince words. It's terrible. But like,
yeah,
I don't know.
And like some of the references were really funny once you looked them up, like if you know them. He was talking about Wilrow Hood and how like you just see him run by in the background. That's the guy carrying the ice cream machine.
Oh, that's
on
great.
Flag City, yeah.
See, but I've never known to go look this shit up or know it offhand.
Right? It's like a deep, that's deep trivia.
Crap, I failed.
Well, because people know that guy, but I didn't know his name.
I know the guy, and I know the ice cream maker.
Exactly.
That's all I know.
So, yeah, I mean, they were talking about how there was time to show Yoda making his root leaf stew, but not some of the like more important plot stuff like the bounty hunter on Ord Mantell, which... Okay, so like if you're a super Star Wars nerd like me, you know that was a short story that they wrote in the 70s.
Mm-hmm.
And Corey Burton actually was the voice of Luke Skywalker in that audiobook, like back in the 80s. So the story has been told. So I don't know. I was just like, this is just unnecessary. All of this complaining is just totally unnecessary. I did appreciate the actors doing their best.
Oh, sure. Yeah. I mean, yeah, I didn't get any of it.
Did you laugh at the Star Trek reference, though?
I did catch that one. I don't know if I laughed, but I did catch that one. I was on a 10-second delay just trying to keep up.
Mm-hmm.
Because when I don't understand something, I'm trying to figure it out as the story or something is continuing, and so I miss bits.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
But I did not miss the Star Trek reference.
I just enjoyed his Captain Kirk impression that made me chuckle.
Oh, yeah, that was, yeah.
So, that's all I have to say.
That's it. Those were the two stories this round. Like we said, they were short. Yeah, they didn't have a lot of depth, which is fine because they don't have to be deep every time. We appreciate depth, but... These are definitely different than the other ones we've done, but it just shows you the varied amounts of storytelling that can take place from different points of view, I guess. Even if you don't understand what the hell they're talking about.
Well, and I also appreciate that there are some people who really like it when a sci-fi writer takes time to talk about the food and the environment and all the stuff around. I'm not one of those people. I prefer you to get to the story, but I know there are people who love that. So I'm sure they're trying to cater to all kinds of taste.
You know what popped up in my mind was eating at the restaurant that was on the Star Cruiser. Because they really put a lot of attention to detail. And it was really good flavored, like, well put together flavors on the Star Cruiser. For all that can be said about the stay at the Star Cruiser, the food was fantastic. You know, 8 out of 10 overall. Mm-hmm. And they really did try to make it look from a different galaxy. and each planet had its own obvious detail to it, like its own unique thing. And
that's cool.
That story about the chef and her talking about the different ingredients and putting them together and this, that, and the other, it totally took me back to the Star Cruiser because it just reminded me of, like, the different stuff they had set out and that were brought out to us. And it was, you know, it was cool. It harkened me back to that.
It made me wonder if any of that was referencing, either referencing the Star Cruiser or food that's at Disney, or vice versa, where because the story exists now, they take that into the Star Cruiser and make food based on something that somebody wrote already. So,
but nobody mentioned Cyril's cereal.
Does that exist yet? Because it needs to be a thing.
I was in Batu in October for my 40th birthday trip. And I didn't see any of Cyril's cereal. So maybe it's still coming. Do it.
And like Andor also brought us calf, like in a movie, in a show. Totally. Like coffee is a thing now. So sell that also.
They had it on the Star Cruiser and it was called calf. So I really appreciated that. Yes.
That's good.
Yes. It was good.
I think it's funny that they call tea, but they had to change coffee to calf. I don't.
Yeah, I don't. It. Yep.
Star Wars.
Join us back here next week. We're going to take a turn from short stories to the music of Star Wars. And in fact, both of us are going to choose at least two, if not three, of our favorite musical score pieces throughout all of Star Wars media, all movies, all animations, all everything. And we're going to talk about the scenes that they're in, a little background on the music making, perhaps, and why we love it so much. Everybody knows that music and Star Wars, they're iconic together. So join us back here for a little icon talk.
Thank you so much for joining us here on the Most Things Kenobi podcast. We appreciate every single one of our patrons and are grateful for your support. If you'd like to support the podcast and become a patron as well, head over to the Most Things Kenobi Patreon. As always, you can follow us on Tumblr, Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube. And don't forget to subscribe on your favorite podcast player. If you enjoy our podcast, feel free to rate us on Spotify and Apple. And if you need just one place to find all of these, head over to mostthingskenobi.com.
So until next time, my space twin, may the Force be with you.
Always.